story in chapter 17 of Ezekiel. We just read the first verses now, 1 through 10. Now let's see what we have. Right, now here is an eagle over here, and this is an eagle here. There's an eagle down here. Now in between here is this branch here, or this cedar tree here, the cedar tree here. Here is the branch that was taken off and carried over to here, carried here. Now here he set up a vine here, and this vine leaned toward this eagle down here. Now we'll look at that in just a moment. The two eagles in this allegory are Babylon and Egypt. Now the cedar tree is the house of David. Now the twig that was carried away was Jehoiakim, who was Jeconiah rather, who was carried away into captivity in 597. Now the branch here that God planted that was intended to bear fruit there but didn't, but leaned down here, that vine here is Zedekiah. Alright, so here we're reading out the explanation, but I wanted to see that here. Zedekiah, and this branch of Konah or Jeconiah here, and this eagle here was Babylon, and this eagle down here was Egypt. Alright, this is what he's talking about in the allegory, the parable here, this riddle. Alright, now, moreover, the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, say unto the rebellious house, know ye not what these things mean? Tell them, behold, the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem and took the king thereof and the princes thereof. Now that's the branch and the twigs there, and the princes thereof, and brought them to him to Babylon. And he took of the seed royal and made a covenant with him. He also brought him under an oath and took away the mighty of the land. Right, now set up Zedekiah. When he set up Zedekiah here, he set up Zedekiah with an oath. I want us to look at that oath for just a moment. Back in 2 Chronicles, I think it's about the 2 Chronicles 36, I believe. 36. I'm going to look at 36. I forgot offhand, but think of where it is. Right, now here's where, when Zedekiah carried away Jeconiah and set up Zedekiah, he made an oath with him, made him swear by Jehovah that he would be faithful unto him. I hope I can find get my point here eventually. Now, look at 36 here and verse 13, yes. 2 Chronicles 36:13. And he also rebelled against King Nebuchadnezzar, that's Zedekiah did, who had made him swear by God, but he stiffened his neck and hardened his heart against turning unto Jehovah, the God of Israel. Now, Zedekiah swore with an oath by the Lord that he would abide by him and be subject to him. Now he violated that oath. Now I think we're going to learn a lesson here, that when a nation makes a covenant, God expects them to keep that covenant. Now when our presidents become president, they put their hand on the Bible and take an oath of allegiance to the nation, to the laws of the land. Well, now God expects them to be faithful to that. So like Nixon took his oath but failed to keep that oath. Right? Now when they make an oath or covenant with a foreign country, God expects that country to keep the oath that it made. So Zedekiah swore with an oath by the Lord to be faithful to him. Now that's what Jeremiah tried to get Zedekiah to go ahead and submit to the king Nebuchadnezzar, for it'll only be about 70 years, then it'll be over. But if you don't, you're going to destroy the nation, and you're going to be carried away into captivity also. Right? Now, so the point is, now let's read a little farther here now. Right? Now notice here, know ye not what these things are? The king of Babylon came to Jerusalem, took this, the king thereof, then took the seed royal, made a covenant with him, He also brought him under an oath and took away the might, mighty of the land. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar did in 597. When he came to Jerusalem, took away Konah, or Jeconiah, Jehoiakim, three different names by which he called. And he carried him into captivity. That's the branch of the cedar there. The cedar tree there of Lebanon represents, in this allegory, it represents the house of David. Right? Then he set up Zedekiah. He set him up with an oath that Zedekiah would be faithful to him. Right? Now look a little further. That the kingdom might be base, that it might not lift itself up, but that by keeping his covenant it might stand. Now, it was not going to be the power it once was. Judah wouldn't. But if the king will be faithful now to this oath which he has taken, then though you won't be great anymore, you'll still be subject unto Nebuchadnezzar. You will still stand. You won't be destroyed. But if you violate that oath, then you're going to be destroyed. Now, but he rebelled against him in sending his ambassadors into Egypt that they might give him horses and much people. And shall he prosper? Shall he escape that doeth such things? Shall he break the covenant and yet escape? All right. I want us to keep this allegory before us and understanding of it. So here, this great eagle here was Babylon that came over and carried away the branch here of the cedar and set up Zedekiah here, a low vine here, where he set up with an oath to be loyal unto the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. But here, this other eagle down here, Egypt, it also has many feathers. And I think those many colors of the first eagle indicate the many cultures and nations that were subject unto Babylon, or under Babylon. But now, Nebuchadnezzar, Zedekiah, who had the oath of allegiance to him, he leaned over here toward Egypt and asked Egypt for horses and men with which to fight a war against the Babylonians. Well, he was under an oath, and he sworn by God, by Jehovah, by the Lord, what he would do. Well, that's the thing that God's concerned about. When we take an oath, calling God to witness, I don't care whether it's a nation or an individual, God expects that nation or individual to be faithful to that oath or covenant which it made. There's a very important lesson to learn here. Right? Now let's move on now in this. Of the covenant, and yet escape, you think, as I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, surely in the place where the king dwelleth, that made him king, whose oath he despised, and whose covenant he brake, even with him in the midst of Babylon shall he die. All right, so now here's Zedekiah made this covenant by an oath here on the king of Babylon. But he leaned down here toward this one and tried to get him to help him in the war against him. Now God says, you think he's going to get by with that? No. In the country where the man whom he made the oath, there he's going to die. So Zedekiah will be carried away into Babylon, and there he will die. Well, that's exactly what happened here. And Zedekiah then will be carried into Babylon, and he will die there, having violated the oath of God. Now, if he had kept his oath, and if he'd gone ahead and served Babylon, then the nation of Judah would have been spared. But he didn't do that. Therefore, the nation was destroyed. He saw his son slain before his very eyes, and he was blinded. Then he was carried away blind into Babylon. Now, you remember, that was the allegory of Ezekiel's action, you remember? When he packed up his goods and put them in a sack over his back, dug a hole through the wall of his little building, little mud house, and went out into the dark. What did that signify? Ezekiel said, that meant that the king would come into this land but wouldn't see it. Well, why didn't he see it? Because he was blind. When he finally was captured and taken to Riblah, there before Nebuchadnezzar slew his two sons before his very eyes, then put his eyes out and carried him away into captivity blind. So he died in the land of Babylon, but he never saw it. That's what God said, you never see the land, but he died. Why won't he see it? Because he'd be carried away blind. Remember, I pointed that out back on in that whatever it was, I forget the chapter now, where he dug the hole through his little mud house there, went out into the dark there. And that was a lesson God was teaching there. Maybe back in chapter 13, something like that. I forget the chapter now. Now then, he's teaching the same lesson now by this allegory. And so the same lesson that I taught by an action back yonder, I'm still teaching by a little different method now. Those folks were hard to get to point. They just couldn't. They were determined not to realize that Jerusalem was going to fall. That's what they couldn't accept. They could not accept the fact that Jerusalem was going to fall and the people were brought over into captivity. Why? Because the temple was there. The temple over Jeremiah. They cried, "The temple, the temple." Yeah, that was the thing that they were trusting in, was the temple. They didn't trust in God. Trust in the temple. Impossible today for an individual to trust in a meeting house and the fact that he meets there, but he's still isn't trusting in God. The fact that I meet in the meeting house every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, and in between if necessary, really, that doesn't guarantee anything. It's significant if I'm faithful to it, but it doesn't guarantee anything. The faith must be in God. The life must be lived in relation to Him. That's going to come in our next chapter. All right? Now, I want you to ask any question if you want it. Now, notice here, for he despised the oath of the covenant, who he had given to the hand and had done all these things, he shall not escape. Therefore, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, verse 19, as I live, surely mine oath that he hath despised, and my covenant that he hath broken, I will even bring upon his own head. Well, it was my oath. He swore by me. He swore by my name. Well, that's a binding oath when you swear by God. You call him to witness that. God's going to witness it. If I break it, you're a witness to that too, don't you see? All right? And I will spread my net upon him, and he shall be taken in my snare, and I will bring him to Babylon, and will enter into judgment with him there for his trespass, that he has trespassed against me. What was the trespass? He violated the oath. He violated the covenant. He made a covenant with the king of Babylon. He was swore by God to keep that oath, called God to witness. He broke that. He went down to Egypt to get horses and men to fight against the man he had the covenant with. You think he's going to escape? No, God said, I'm going to bring him over here, and I'm going to judge him in this land concerning which he broke the covenant. There's a lesson in that, isn't there? There's a lesson there. A lesson for our nation, a lesson for an individual, a lesson for all of us. I can't enter into a covenant and break it with impunity. Can't do that. I don't care if it's a marriage covenant or whatever, whether it's a covenant when I obeyed the gospel, a covenant with God to be faithful to Him, to serve Him, or whether it's a covenant that a nation makes with another nation. Care what it is. Covenants are sacred in the eyes of God. All right? And all his fugitives and all his bands shall fall by the sword. That's those who belong to Zedekiah. And they that remain shall be scattered toward every wind, and you shall know that I, Jehovah, have spoken. All right? Now, you remember back in the fourth chapter there, shaved himself, took all of his hair off his beard and his head, and then put them into three piles, and one of them he whacked with a sword. One of them scattered to the wind, the other he burned in the fire. Right? Some would be burned in the fire in Jerusalem. Some would be fugitives throughout the world, but the sword would follow them. And some of them scattered to the wind, and a few hairs he kept in his garment. These represent a remnant that will finally come back. Over and over, he's teaching them over and over what's going to happen. Teaching them every possible. I think Ezekiel is one of the great books of the Bible to me in trying to learn how to teach and to get lessons across by various means of doing it. Acting it out, using allegories, parables, riddles, whatever it might be to get people to hear and understand the truth. Roll it now. And they shall know that I, Jehovah, have spoken. They'll be scattered toward every wind. Now, here's another one. Now, notice the number of I's. I believe it's six times that I. Now, back here, now in this point here, God used Nebuchadnezzar. Here's Nebuchadnezzar. Here's the king of Babylon. you Nebuchadnezzar here to carry away this branch here. And you demand Nebuchadnezzar to take this vine, just take Zedekiah, carry him into Babylon. Now, he took the top sprig of this cedar tree and the twigs and brought them over. Now, God's going to do this one. Now, here's one that God's not going to use an intermediary to do this one. So this one then will become what kind of a prophecy? This next one is messianic. Now look at it very carefully now. One of the messianic prophecies of, and Ezekiel just beginning to bring a few of those in. They don't find any of them at the first stop. They come in later. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, I will also take of the lofty top of the cedar, that's the house of David, and will set it. I will crop off from the topmost of its young twigs a tender one, and I will plant it upon a high and lofty mountain in the mountain of the height of Israel. Now, what mountain would that be? The height of Israel. It would be Mount Zion, wouldn't it? In Mount Zion. Now, high is some in elevation, but higher than any of them in the mind and eyes of God. So I'm going to plant on a lofty mountain. In the mountain of the height of Israel will I plant it, as another I, and it shall bring forth boughs and bear fruit and be a goodly cedar, and under it shall dwell all the birds of every wing. In the shade of the branches thereof shall they dwell, and all the trees of the field shall know that I, that's the sixth time I believe, Jehovah have brought down the high tree, have exalted the low tree, have dried up the green tree, and have made the dry tree to flourish. Now here's the sixth time, I guess seven, something like that, six, seven. I, Jehovah, have spoken and have done it. All right, now, here while God used Nebuchadnezzar to carry away this branch here of cedar, and the cedar is the house of David here, at the house of David now. He carries that away, he carries away Kotmah, now he comes back, takes Zedekiah back on it. Now, I, Jehovah, will take a branch out of this cedar here, and I will plant it here on a lofty mountain. The mountain, that mountain is Zion. So now, God's going to bring forth one here, a branch there, of the house of David that will accomplish his purpose. Be right. This is a great chapter. It's a chapter here on the value of an oath or the sacredness of an oath. It's a lesson here on the tragedy of an individual violating the oath or turning away from God, turning to another other than God, and all of that. And when God's used all these, now God's using the nations, he's going to use Egypt, he's going to use Babylon, he's going to use Zedekiah and his bunch. But after all, God's going to set up a twig or a branch of this house of David, and it's going to become a great tree there, and it will rule and accomplish its purpose. So that's a very important chapter. Any question over that? I realize when you talk about something, you might have studied it before, you may not have. I know when you talk about something that's new to you and you haven't studied it before, sometimes the teacher will try to think he got it across but didn't succeed. You have a question on it. Anybody? Yes, ma'am.
I think that he chose the cedar tree.
Ma'am?
I wonder why he chose the cedar tree at this.
I don't know. The cedar of Lebanon, because of that great Lebanon. Lebanon here is the mountain that symbolized his people here. And the cedar of Lebanon was the great tree of that particular mountain. So I presume that was it. I don't know. Because it was greater than the oak, it was greater than any other, the greatest of the trees of that particular time. He lived over here. If it had been over here, I guess it was a sequoia, probably. Don't you imagine?
Yeah.
Because that's a greater one than this one. This is the greatest. All right. So, if I have any further question, I wouldn't know just why, unless it is because it was Lebanon symbolizing the people over here, symbolizing the whole of God's people, the Jews over here in Palestine. And so he's simply using that great tree of that mountain. Now, that's a reason I could do it. All right. Now, I'm not going to try to get through right on time today because I've started late. Turn on with me now to the 18th chapter. Now, here's another great chapter. Now, to me, This is one of the most important chapters in the book of Ezekiel. Because up until now, when you go back and study Amos and Hosea and those early prophets, they were looking at the nation. The nation was the thing in mind. Now then, the nation's going to be carried away. All right? Ezekiel puts the emphasis on the individual, on the individual person. And we see that in this. Now, this is a good chapter because the people misunderstood. They thought they were being carried away into captivity because of the sins of Manasseh. Manasseh was that very wicked king before Josiah. Right? He was a very wicked king. Hezekiah was a good king. Manasseh, his son, was a wicked king. Josiah, the son of Manasseh, I believe he was Manasseh's son, he was a good king. So here you have a good king, a bad king, and a good king. Right? Now, there's your bad one. There's your good one. And then they're carried away. This bad one here, God says they're going to destroy him because of his sins. But now, these people now had the idea that they were being carried away because of the sins of Manasseh. Why should we be carried captive because of the sins of our fathers? Now, this is a great chapter on that. We may not have time to finish it, but of course I want to get it well. Now, let's note. The word of Jehovah came unto me again, saying, What mean ye that you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, the fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. Now this goes back to Jeremiah 31 and 29, because this is where the people were using this, and Jeremiah mentioned, but now this has gotten all the way from over here, clear on back to, gotten from Palestine over to Babylon. So they were using it in Babylon. So here it is, back in verse 27. Behold, the day is come, saith Jehovah, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast, and it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them to pluck up and sow on them, and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, and saith Jehovah. Now here 29. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. That everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grapes, his teeth shall be set on edge. All right? So Jeremiah is teaching that, correcting them in Judah. He's correcting them on misuse of that proverb. And now so is Ezekiel over in Babylon. Both of them are using it. So now God says here, why do you say that? Saying the father even, as I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, you shall not have occasion any more to use this proverb in Israel. Behold, all souls are mine, as the soul of the father, so also the soul of the son is mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Alright, now what kind of death is he talking about? I don't know. Is he talking about eternal death? From our point of view under Christ, I doubt it. For that's not an important or an outstanding doctrine in the Old Testament at all. Or is he talking about physical death? Possibly, but that doesn't seem to fit it. Is he talking here? There's another third alternative. That is not or this or that. There's a third alternative. To live is more than just to breathe, isn't it? To really live is to live in have a right relation with God, be at peace within oneself, and to actually live, because she that gives herself to pleasure is dead while she liveth, Paul said. So an individual can be dead while living physically, or an individual can live spiritually, although he may be in very poor physical condition, you see. So I think he's talking here about life that is life indeed. I don't know that that's so. I really don't know which he has in mind. It could have been eternal, but that's not given much emphasis in the Old Testament. It's the idea of those in right relation with God are the ones that really live. These are the ones that live. Right? So, but God says here, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. But if a man be just, now notice here, usually if a man be just, and do that which is lawful and right, and hath not eaten upon the mountains, that is, to the idols, neither lift up his eyes to the idols, the house of Israel, the idols of the house of Israel, neither hath defiled his neighbor's wife, neither hath come near to a woman in her impurity, and hath not wronged any, but hath restored to the debtor his pledge, hath taken naught by robbery, hath given his bread to the hungry, hath covered the naked with a garment. He that hath not given forth upon interest, neither hath taken any increase, that hath withdrawn his hand from iniquity, hath executed true justice between man and man, hath walked in my statutes and kept my ordinances to deal truly, he is just. He shall surely live, saith the Lord Jehovah. All right, here's your good man. Here's your man that abides in all these things. Now, this good man, God says, he's going to live. He can live about what his father was. Now he turns to this man's son. Now notice next, now I might read all that because it says the same thing in there. He goes on now in this chapter. Now, if he beget a son that is a robber, he shed her blood and so on, goes on mentioning about those same things up there that were good, but now he violates all of these. Now look down at the end of verse 13. He hath done all these abominations. He shall surely die. His blood shall be upon him. Well, it sounds like maybe it's physical death, but we know that that's not always true. That the good man sometimes is caught, his life snatched off, and the bad man lives on. But the point is, he alone is responsible for what he has done. So here now is your bad man. Now he shall die. He shall surely die. He shall not live. And his blood shall be upon him. In other words, he is responsible. He's the one that shall answer to God. Now, suppose this bad man has a good son. Now, notice next here. Now, lo, if he beget a son that seeth all his father's sins, which he hath done, and feareth, and doeth not the such like. And he goes on and tell what he hasn't done and what he has done. Now look down here to verse, the middle here of verse 17 here. He shall not die for the iniquity of his father. He shall surely live. All right? So this man now lives. Now he does not die for the iniquity of his father. Here was his son. Right, now this one here then becomes the father of this one. This son is the father of this one. So this son here is not going to die for the sins of his father. That's right there. That's very positive. So what is Ezekiel teaching in this? He's teaching here that the proverb, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are on edge, is a false idea there. And the idea of that is, of course, that here the father has eaten the sour grapes, and the children are the ones that suffer for it. Now, there is this to be considered also, though. Now, an individual may suffer the consequence of what his father has done, but he doesn't suffer the guilt of it. He's not the responsibility for it. Now, if here's an individual, now take these young folks here that are using all this dope and all that, cracking that. You look at these little children, the babies born to them on the television there, and they're suffering the consequence of their parents' sins, but they're not guilty of it. See the difference? And so, when my father died, whatever he might have done, and he was a man, he was not a Christian, he was a man of the world and all that, whatever he did, I was not guilty of his sins. But he left us because of some of the things that he did there. He left us very poor when he died, and we suffered the consequence of it. Now, the same will be with my children. Whatever I do, the consequences may be good or bad. But whatever I've done, my good cannot be imputed to them, and my sins can't be imputed to them. Well, that strikes at the very taproot of Calvinism. Or, and how far back you go? Well, they say when you get back to Adam, we suffer the guilt of Adam's sin. No, we suffer the consequence. What was the consequence of Adam's sin? Death. I brought death into the world. I suffer the consequence of it. Also, here was an example here that followed in violation of God's law. I may do that, but I'm not guilty of anything that Adam did. And I'm not responsible for anything my father did. My children are not going to be responsible for anything I did. Now, that's the point here. Right? A very important lesson to get. That's why I say this is such an important chapter in the book here. A lot of folks don't know that, even now. Now, go ahead. Yet you say, wherefore, or why, doth not the Son bear the iniquity of the Father? I think that should be a question mark there. Rather than the other, some writers think so, and I think it should too. You would say, well, why not? Does not the Son bear the iniquity of the Father? Well, yes. They're still arguing that the Son does bear the iniquity of the Father. When the Son hath done that which is lawful and right, and hath kept all my statutes, and hath done them, he shall surely live. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. The Son shall not bear the iniquity of the Father, neither shall the Father bear the iniquity of the Son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. Now take David, for instance. Now, his children suffered the consequence of what he had done. They didn't suffer the guilt of it. Right? But now that was Absalom, had the example of his father, and took the bad part of his father instead of the good part. But he was not guilty of what the father had done, and the father wasn't responsible for what he had done. Every individual that reaches the age of accountability becomes responsible for that which he does, whether it be good or whether it be bad. All right, let's see now if we can. So that verse 4 and verse 20 are very important verses in this book. Then in between the two, you have the three illustrations of the good man, the bad man, and the good son there, the descendants there. Now, but if the wicked turn from his way, all his sin. Now, here's a fine lesson, too. All right? A man is free to change. I have the freedom to make a change. I don't have to continue in what I was doing. And so that's what he wants. Yeah, this wicked man, what he was doing, but if he turns from that wickedness, he'll live. Now listen to this great passage. But if the wicked turn from all his sins that he hath committed, and keep all my statutes, and do that which is lawful and right, he shall surely live, he shall not die. Sure, he can change, he can turn from that, from what he was doing. None of his transgression that he hath committed shall be remembered against him. In his righteousness that he hath done, he shall live. Have I any pleasure in the death of the wicked, saith the Lord Jehovah? And not rather that he should return from his way and live? What does God want? No, God doesn't want him. He doesn't want you to die in your sins or anybody else to. He wants us to repent and turn from those things. Change our mind. Change our will. Don't continue in that, is what he says here. But now, when the righteous... Now, let's look at the other side of the coin. But when the righteous turneth away from his righteousness, and committeth iniquity, and doeth according to all the abomination that the wicked man doeth, shall he live? None of his righteous deeds shall be, that he hath done shall be remembered. In his trespass that he hath trespassed, and in his sin that he hath sinned, in them shall he die. So now then, after that's what Paul meant when he said that after running this race. Lo, he said that I myself could become a reprobate here or rejected here. After all that he had done, he realized he could do it. So could I. After serving God for these 70 years or so, by now in these last years, I could turn away from it. And when I die, what would I die in? I would die in the condition that I was in when I died. I can't store up something after a while. Here's a little idea a lot of people have. Here's some scales. Now, here's so many righteous deeds over here. Here's so many things that are not righteous over here. And whichever one outweighs the other is the one that's going to... You're going to be saved. That's not a word of truth in that. No such thing as that. God doesn't have some scales and balances in there with my good and bad deeds. It's a perfect faith and an effort to live a flawless life. I want to show that in my next lesson here. The law demands a flawless obedience to it. Now, the law of grace demands a flawless faith in the Lord. Now, my faith is that which God has said, perfection of faith here. I never be perfect in my doings. I can have a perfect and flawless faith, a perfect disposition to do what's right. That's what God looks at. And so here then, this individual, he's going to meet God in whatever condition he died in. All right. Yet you say the way of the Lord is not equal. Hear now, O house of Israel, it is not my way. You're saying not equal. Oh, you're saying we are suffering for the sins of our fathers. No, he said you're not suffering for them. Your way is unequal. When the righteous man turneth away from his righteousness and committeth iniquity and dieth therein, in his iniquity that he hath done shall he die. Again, when the wicked man turneth away from his wickedness that he hath committed and doeth that which is lawful and right, he shall save his soul alive, because he considered that he gave thought to it. He considered and turned away from all his transgressions he hath committed, he shall surely live. He shall not die. Yet hath saith the house of Israel, the way of the Lord is not equal. They're charging God with not being fair, just, and impartial. God said, it's not I, it's you. You don't know what you're talking about. O house of Israel, are not my ways equal? Are not your ways unequal? Therefore I will judge you, O house of Israel, everyone according to his ways, saith the Lord Jehovah. I won't judge you for what your fathers had done. I won't judge your father for what you are doing. Every one of you will be judged by who he is and what he is as an individual. So don't you see a great advancement and progress here from the nation to the individual? Now remember this. Although one does not suffer the guilt of another, he suffers the consequence. Now, they might have been in Babylon because of the consequences of the nation's whole disobedience, but they've been disobedient with them. So they've been just as disobedient too. And the Jew, you see, if I keep the law, I'm all right. I mean, if I keep certain aspects of it and I'm faithful to that circumcision and my worship and all that, I'm all right. No, God said you're not. It's what you are in character. Look at those things that you do or don't do back there. The moral laws there, all that. All right, return ye and turn yourselves from all your transgressions. So iniquity shall not be your ruin. Cast away from you all your transgressions, wherein you have transgressed, and make you a new heart and a new spirit. For why will you die, O house of Israel? So here's the freedom and the right for an individual to choose to turn from his wickedness. So an individual turns to wickedness or turns away from it, this is a matter of his own will, of his own determination, his own consideration. And so, the idea today, every time somebody, something happens, they will want to blame somebody else for it. Now, one I always think about is when President Kennedy was killed, people told me Dallas was to blame. Dallas was to blame. Dallas wasn't to blame. Some nut that shot him was to blame. They were not guilty of the thing. And so they've been under the guilt of that all these years, some of them have. I wouldn't. If I lived in Dallas, I wouldn't think a thing about it, as far as I'm concerned. And just like here in Tucson, everybody wants to blame someone else for what they've done. Blame the past. Blame your side. So, no, every individual is responsible for what he does. I'm an entity of intellect, affections, and will. When my affections are for the wrong thing, and my intellect allows me to do it, my will submits to it, I'm responsible. Last verse. Cast away from you all, make you a new heart and a new spirit, for why will you die, O house of Israel? Now this great thought. For I have no pleasure in the death of him that died, except the Lord Jehovah. Wherefore, turn yourselves and live. I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, God said. None whatever. And yet, God has ordained laws that certain wicked individuals are subject to capital punishment. But that's because God loves what's right. He doesn't love the death of that fellow. It's a principle of right, and that's what's coming to him. Well, we'll stop there. Didn't get all that first part on the board on this, but we got that much on it. All right. Take chapters next time.